Contemporary Music Centre podcast series. Composer of the Month for September 2008, Scott McLaughlin. For part one of this two-part podcast, Scott joins Michael Quinn in the Contemporary Music Centre for an in-depth interview about moving away from traditional notation, deciding to become a composer, his listening habits, compositions based on object relationships, and working closely with musicians.
Scott, on your CMC profile, you say that you've fallen out with the abstraction of notes on paper. Why? What's missing in that kind of conventional method of composing for you? Or what's it failing to do for you?
I think it's more about where I came from. Being a composer, you have the necessity to communicate with musicians via notation. That's just the way the system works. Some composers have stretched that to limits in various directions. I think it's because I came... Most of the musical ideas that I wanted to get down on paper didn't fit in notation. They didn't fit in rhythms, they didn't fit in motifs and melodies, and the notational system is designed for that sort of thing. It was when I really discovered spectral music that I saw that you could just reduce it to frequencies and amplitudes and time notation, and that just opened up a window for me. It seemed much more... That was a much more direct communication of what I was trying to get across. So then it was just a matter of putting that into a notation that musicians could deal with.
What is it you're trying to communicate? Because the approach you take is quite, frankly, the wrong word, but difficult for a general audience to make the step into it, because it seems to be dealing with the subatomic, you know, that what's hidden, the subterranean, rather than the surface of music and sound.
I suppose some people would probably disagree that what I do is mostly on the surface, but that's another argument entirely. I think that there's two questions there. There's one about writing essentially difficult music, and there's one about communication. I'll fall back on the Stravinsky argument with that one. There's nothing emotional or meaningful as really trying to be communicated. It's, you know, it's almost impossible to talk about that. I think if we could say what we were trying to communicate, we wouldn't be writing music. We'd just be saying it.
And when did that urge to compose begin?
Before I tried composing on paper, I was in my teenage years. I just wanted to be in a band, play guitars, be in a band. Not for the fame aspect. I just liked the sound. I loved the sound of the big guitars and, you know, the kind of whatever bands I was into at the time. It just really grew out from that. I found after a while that one guitar, or even a drums and a bass and all that, just wasn't enough. The ideas were bigger than that. And that's when I went off and did a music degree. It was just a good crossover time. I was living in Belfast. I used to go down to the Sonorities Festival. I knew nothing about classical music or contemporary music even, but I used to go to the Sonorities Festival in Belfast just to see the strange, crazy stuff. And after a couple of years of doing that, I just decided, yeah, this is for me. I like this.
Thank you.
And were there particular pieces, particular composers that you were hearing at Sonorities that, that made a connection with you, that acted as a springboard for you into something else?
I can truly say that I regret not having a clue what I listened to at any of those Sonorities. I have no idea. It was just all mad stuff. About the only one that sticks in my head, I think there was a year when they did Rolf Hine played the Ligeti Etudes, but even at that point, I think that was after I'd made the decision. I remember a concert of an entire concert of solo Donatoni viola music, which I came out grumbling and screaming about. An hour and a half of Donatoni solo viola music was just too much for me at the time. But at the same time, I knew there was something in there that I wanted to get at. Just that wasn't the angle I was looking for.
Is it a concentrated experience for you writing music, or is it an expansive experience?
It's a horrible experience. it's both, and that's probably the problem. You're constantly jumping from the microscopic to the macroscopic and back out. You spend too long in the microscopic, you lose track of the macro. It's very concentrated. I can't really do anything else while I'm composing, much to the frustration of everybody around me.
But you've described the elements that you work with as the maths of frequency and amplitude, the building and breaking of temporal patterns.
Hmm.
Just tease that out for me a little bit more and tell me how that from an intellectual ambition or recognition of what you want to do actually manifests itself in the process of writing.
I think the process, there's a sense in some ways that it's almost an automatic writing. There are, like anyone else, that there are a few particular processes that I use, definite ones, which I found produce the results that I'm interested in. I mean, with the maths of frequency and amplitude, that's largely about figuring out relations between pitches, ones that fit into... I mean, for example, some of the more spectral things I've done have involved analysing specific types of sounds and creating an archetype from that, like analysing creaking door or, in one case, tin pots and bells and things like that. And then just trying to see what kind of an archetype you can make out of that and then work from that, use that as a model. So that's the intensive part, and then you have created an object, and you can take that and start freely composing with that. But the other part about the patterns, I think that's the most important thing. With the composition students I have, I always try to explain that from my point of view, it's just about patterns. Everything is patterns. And I think that's very much as people, as humans, as sensory animals, that's what we perceive as patterns. And it's all about just breaking the patterns, building up expectations, breaking expectations. Not quite about the drama of that, but that's how a piece keeps moving.
Do you recognise where this fascination, or this particular approach you have to music making, comes from? Or rather, what does it satisfy in you?
Why? That's a very good question. Difficult to answer without going into some sort of pop psychology. I think on the most basic level, it satisfies the need to create, to do something. I think as a composer, a lot of the time my reaction is all. I think I probably got into composing because the music that I saw that was being written, I thought, yeah, this is great. Some of this is fantastic, but I think I could. There's something that it's not doing, and I think I could do that. And occasionally, I come across composers who do things in a similar way to me, and I think, great, other people doing the same kind of thing. I feel I found brethren. And maybe there is something about that in it, that whatever I'm putting into the music, it's about putting that out there and hoping that other people respond similarly. So in a certain way, the more of me I put into the music, the more of other people, me-ish, I'll find. But that's very pop psychology. I don't think that would stand up under any serious analysis.
you're also a performer, aren't you? You perform with bands like Romansk and Desert Village Collective, as one critic review described as sonic daydreamers, which I think is I think to be a very complimentary thing.
Fair.
Are there two sides to the musical personality of Scott McLaughlin, the composer and the performer?
Yeah, they're definitely different sides. There are things I do in performance I would never commit to paper, and possibly vice versa. I think there are probably most of the things I will use in composition that could be done on the fly, I'll stick into live performance at some point. But I think it's a different thing. They have crossover points, but they're different people who are doing it.
The titles you use for individual pieces, for the pieces that you compose, they kind of suggest, to my mind, and this is pop psychology too, but an almost kind of morbid fascination, or at least a kind of gentle preoccupation with things away from the centre, elements on the edge. I mean, I'm thinking words like that kind of sober shadow of the shadow of a shadow you describe in Penumbra, the kind of brooding, constantly shifting layers of dunes. Is your concern with composing with the abstract or the actual? I mean, are you wanting to describe or explain something to yourself that you've seen, or is it something else?
I think it's about, in a lot of ways, it's about translation, transliteration, explaining something through making models of it. That I feel that I understand music in my own way, and that's language is the wrong word, but it's an experience that I can communicate in, and I understand, I take things from it. So when I see something that isn't expressed in music, I tend to think, yes, I could take that and I could express that musically.
When did you start to compose?
99, 2000, in the middle of my... actually about 99. I would say it was when I started putting notes on paper. There's a huge back catalogue of guitar songs and things like that recorded before that, but...
Do you keep those two areas of your musical life separate, or are they part of a continuity?
I think I have to separate them. Again, there are things that I do in what we will call composition that I would never ever do on a kind of pop music. I think they exist in different domains. I have to separate them out.
The way we're describing your music can sound quite severe to a general audience. So do you factor the response of an audience into the equation when you sit down to write something?
I think that the audience, fundamentally, I want the people there to enjoy it. Everybody does. But I don't want to coerce people into coming. I certainly don't want people to feel, I've paid my money, this better entertain me. It's not entertainment. It's not designed to be entertainment. I would like to think that the people who enjoy it will find the same fascination in it that I've found in it. I suppose fundamentally, I'm not willing to change what I do to please a group of people who I don't know and can't possibly predict what they'll like or won't like. I'd rather do what I do very well and let people come to that. The people that like it will hopefully like it.
And what about musicians? I mean, you have a piece on the latest CMC sampler, Bifurcations, played by the Dunleavy Clarinet Quintet. Tell me how that came to be written and the degree to which they were involved in the process of creating the piece.
Oh, they were fantastic, actually. They were all a bunch of undergrads at the University of Huddersfield, where I'm at, and they formed a clarinet quartet, and they just came to myself and Richard Glover, another composer, and said, would you guys write us some pieces? In terms of consultation with them, it was mostly about technical issues, going through things, making sure things were playable, things of that nature. I think, and you know, they were very open to suggestions, and they gave plenty of suggestions on how things could be done, but they were really, let us do what we do.
Did you think that's a collaboration, or was it a different process to your mind?
Definitely. Ultimately, I would like to, and I think I need to with my music, find musicians who are completely in tune with it, or at least who think that it's something that I could get into. I think there's a lot of elements of my music which aren't musical enough for a lot of players. There's not a lot to do in my music sometimes. You play one note extremely well rather than 100 notes. In terms of collaborations, I've had some. I collaborate with a saxophone player called Ian Harrison, who specialises in multiphonics, specialises in extended techniques and how they work. So we have a fantastic collaboration in that a piece, Whitewater, that I wrote effectively with him, has gone now to a few other players, and it's interesting after working on it for a year with him, seeing how other people tackle it and what they bring to it.
Clearly suggests that's not the case. It kind of describes a drama evolves as it becomes more harmonically complex, and then it appears as if it's about to disintegrate. So there's a spontaneity and a sense of the nowness of it in performance. Is that important to you?
Definitely, yeah. It has been suggested to me before that, given that I'm so interested in control of frequency and that, why not just do it all on computers? And I have done quite a few pieces using MaxMSP and the like, but it needs the spontaneity, it needs the organicity of live performers. You just can't beat that. I've done my share of tape pieces, and some of them sound great, but you just can't beat live players doing it.
I mean, to my ears, it sounds distinctively a Scott McLaughlin piece. It starts in a state of calm and rises to a state of crisis, whether it's actual or imminent, but that we never hear kind of resolved in any way, or at least in a way that's neat or easily digestible. It does seem to demand a response from an audience, or expect the audience to respond to the piece. So it's as if the piece isn't finished until the audience itself responds to it. Is that, do you recognise that? Is that a parameter that you build into the equation?
Yeah, I suppose so, to a certain extent.
But does it matter to you how an audience reacts?
Ultimately, not really. Ultimately, I'm happy with the piece or I'm not happy with the piece. I'd be lying if I said I didn't care what the audience think. Of course, I'd love for the audience to love it. But ultimately, I'm more concerned with whether the piece worked or didn't work in my mind. I mean, the strange thing, of course, is that often I've had pieces which... A couple of situations where a piece wasn't performed the way it was supposed to be. Due to either misscoring on my part or miscommunications with the musicians. And some audience members have said afterwards, I really liked the way this and this happened. And I thought, well, that's not what I intended, but I'm glad you liked it. So you don't really have much control over what the audience thinks.
This podcast has been brought to you by Contemporary Music Centre Ireland. For more information, audio and video, go to www.cmc.ie or else check out our MySpace page. That's myspace.com/CMC Ireland.